Gary Newman. This completes our Gary Newman super hit medley.
His box set.
Yeah. He was one of those artists where if you liked this song in the album days, you'd go out and buy the album, then you'd realize there's nothing else worth listening to on here. That was it.
Oh, I did that a couple of times. It's like you've liked one song and you go get the album and it's like...
Yeah, I told my daughter, and everybody now who lives in the digital download age, it's so much easier now to like music because you don't get the bad stuff that filled up the rest of the... You like that song, you download it to your phone, you listen to it. That's it. You don't have to feel like you have to get the rest of it. This portion of the show is brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States, the original $189 window company, online at windowworldst.louis.com. This is the showbiz segment of the show where Max joins us and we talk about movies and TV. And this weekend there is a movie that is opening that is going to be on so many screens that in many movie theaters, they're not actually showing anything else.
Really?
It's called The Fate of the Furious.
That's right.
Oh.
Which is, what, the eighth one?
Yeah, I think it's actually on the title screen, The Fate, with a number eight behind it.
Oh, how clever they are.
The Fate, number eight of The Furious.
Yeah, no, I actually went today and looked on a couple of local movie theaters at showtimes, and they're showing that movie every half hour.
It's going to make a whole lot of money. People love this franchise, and good for them. I'm going to be uncomfortable and... unpopular right off the bat with the showbiz segment because you pointed out how popular this movie series is and how popular this movie is probably going to be this weekend in the box office. And guess what? I'm not going to review The Fate of the Furious. Also, to add insult to injury, I'm a pretty big fan of Gary Newman.
Wow.
Wow. Name another song.
Our Friends Electric, Down in the Park. Hit a couple of other.
He is a fan.
Okay.
Foo Fighters did a cover of Down in the Park, which is fantastic.
Well, if the Foo Fighters did it, I would listen to it. But
I'm just saying.
I could be
unpopular.
Wait, Dan can review. Like didn't see it either. Go ahead, Dan. Review The Fate of the Furious.
Okay, I think Dwayne The Rock Johnson is in this, correct?
Yes.
And Vin Diesel.
Right.
They get together. They don't get along on the set, but they get together and they have a lot of fast cars and they drive really fast. There's a lot of action, a lot of cars getting destroyed and things blowing up.
Wow, what do you give it on a scale of 10?
If you really like stuff like that, I'll give it an 8.
Okay.
Nice.
Pretty good.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
That's probably about right.
That's all I would have on the movie because I didn't go see it either.
I was waiting for a punchline and there wasn't one.
What they've done with this series is they've had the trouble with escalation. You know, the original movie was pretty much just a riff on Point Break. It was kind of like a loose remake of Point Break where this cop infiltrates this, you know, street racing team instead of bank robber surfers. They were street racers. But now they can't just do that again. So in this movie, they've got like a submarine chasing them.
What?
The only logical...
They're in cars, and a submarine is chasing them.
They're in cars, and Charlize Theron, who's now the villain, has, like, Russian codes for nukes. And she contacts Vin Diesel to try... Because she knows he's like, the best at what he does, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And,
because when you
cars,
have Russian nuclear codes, the first person you think
you call
calling,
is Vin
get
Diesel.
Vin Diesel on the phone.
Yes. And so now they have this giant submarine chasing them, crashing out through plates of ice to try to crush these cars. The only logical place...
Kind of like a duck boat.
For the series to go is space.
We're really going fast.
We're going to have Fast and Furious
in
space.
One of those amphibious submarines you've heard so much about.
Yeah.
So I've never seen any of these, have you?
I have not. Oh. I have not. It's pretty widely known among my friends, and I've said this on the air a couple times. I made a bad joke that now I sort of hope comes true back when the third movie was coming out, and I was laughing at the title because, you know, the first one was Fast and Furious. The second one was Too Fast, Too Furious, which is cute, to be sure.
Okay.
The third one was called Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. And everybody was like, what does this mean? Tokyo Drift, what does that mean? And I said, you know what? When this franchise, which is a ridiculous franchise, gets to number 10, I'll marathon the first nine and then go see the 10th movie. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
Well, here we are on the eve of the release of the 8th movie. So I, this might actually happen. I might have to marathon 9 films.
Besides James Bond, has any movie series gone 10 movies?
Well, we're on the 8th Harry Potter film, so the 9th one.
Yeah, but she stopped writing books.
Well, no, she's written 5 screenplays, or she's going to write 5 screenplays. She wrote the screenplay for Fantastic Beasts, and it's in the Harry Potter universe. Okay. You've got young Voldemort, so that one will probably reach those heights. As far as a movie series that's gone beyond
Star Wars, the last one was 8, and we're going to get 9 later this year, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Well, we'll get 8 later on this year with Rogue One. That's the 9th overall movie, so that's approaching 10. As far as movies that have already reached 10, it might just be in the current era, James Bond, because you had Basil Rathbone, Sherlock Holmes. I'm not sure how many Basil Rathbone, Sherlock Holmes there were.
Been a Sherlock Holmes. Well, I'm saying Robert Downey Jr. did a couple of those.
I'll bet if Ian Googles movie series that have reached 10, the Blondie and Dagwood series in the 30s, that probably had about 20.
Were those full movies?
At the time, about 60 minutes, which at the time was full-length movies. So, okay. But as far as current era, which is all the audience cares about, I'm sure that James Bond is the only one that's eclipsed 10.
Wow.
And Fast and Furious might get there. And when it does, when the 10th movie is actually announced and ready to screen, I will marathon all 9 of those films over the course of a couple days.
All right, now help me understand this, because have you ever seen any of these movies, Ian?
No.
Dan, have you?
No.
Okay. Wasn't there a movie called Gone in 60 Seconds that was exactly the same thing, but had Angelina Jolie in it?
Well, that one was about, street racers, right? Did the cops, again,
was about street racers.
But it's about the cops infiltrating them. Paul Walker's character was a cop, but he becomes best buds with Vin Diesel when he realizes they're not so different. And this franchise is about, Paul, it's about family.
Is it a true story?
Based on.
Oh, okay.
Based on a true story. Okay.
You know, Paul Walker died and people lost their minds, and the last movie had a big send-off with that character who drove into the sunset and people were crying. People love this franchise.
Okay.
And, you know, again, good for them. I just don't know how a submarine starts chasing all the cars.
I don't.
We know one person that loves this series.
Max's predecessor.
Yes.
Oh, Colin, yeah,
Colin
sure.
Colin loves it, yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes.
A lot of film critics who you would think would be all high mighty, they love it too.
I don't look down on anybody who likes these. It's just not for me. Fine. Right. You enjoy it? Fine. That's what this movie is for. And by the way, there'll be 100 million other people who will go see this over the course of the next couple of weeks.
With every trailer, the last one, which I think had Judi Dench in it, Kurt Russell, seriously, they had in the last trailer a car leaving a skyscraper and like ramming into another skyscraper. And I thought, maybe this series is for me. And now that we have submarines attacking the cars, I'm getting more comfortable with enjoying this series because it's so out of control.
Well, if it were campy in that way, then I might become interested in seeing it.
How do you do it if it's not camp? How do you have a submarine chasing cars winking at the audience?
Well, I will tell you, submarine chasing cars is right on the cusp of Sharknado.
Yes, 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 you're right. Well, that's why I said earlier, the only place for the series to go is space. That's the only, you're going to have Fast and the Furious in space. It's the only place for it to go. How can you keep ramping it up? You can't take it back bare bones where it's just about street racing. Once you have a submarine, you can't go back.
Fast and Furious 9 with Dwayne Johnson and Elon Musk.
Yeah. SpaceX and the Furious.
Oh, there you go.
And X would be 10. So that could be the 10th movie.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. There's the corporate tie-in, too. Fast and Furious SpaceX.
And it would be the 10th one. There
you go. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, there is another movie that actually opened a couple of days ago.
Yes, a Wednesday. I didn't realize it was a Wednesday release.
Yes, it was, because so many people are going to be off today and, for a Good Friday. And as I always say in my FM DJ voice, I hope it's a good Friday for you. The other movie that opened this week is completely the opposite of the Fast and Furious franchise. It's a heartwarming movie called Gifted. At a time, by the way, where I don't think there's anything out in the movie theaters right now that would qualify as heartwarming.
I agree.
Now, I don't think you should take that as a bad thing. It's an interesting story, and I'll let you tell the story, and then I'll jump in with some comments on it.
Well, let's talk a bit about the director of this movie, Mark Webb. He bursts onto the scene, I think it was about 2009 or so, with a movie called 500 Days of Summer that I greatly enjoyed. It was one of my favorite films that year, Zooey Deschanel and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Like a lot of younger independent filmmakers, he gets picked up by a major studio. This happened with Colin Trevorrow. He did a small film called Safety Not Guaranteed that I thought was really clever and really sweet movie.
Yep.
And Universal came knocking and gave him the keys to Jurassic World, and he went on to a big... So the same thing happened with Mark Webb. Sony came knocking and said, how would you like to reboot Spider-Man for us? So he spent the last 5 or 6 years making pretty bad Spider-Man movies with Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone that made a lot of money, I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars, but underperformed for Sony. So what happened was they gave the rights back to Marvel. We have a unrelated Spider-Man movie coming out, and Mark Webb is back to independent movies. He doesn't stray too far from superheroes, though, because he cast Captain America as the lead in this
Chris Evans
is playing Frank Adler, who is not the father of this gifted young prodigy. He is the uncle of this gifted young prodigy named Mary, played by McKenna Grace. Now, the name McKenna Grace sounds like it was thought up in a Disney lab. And sure enough, her career so far, she's had more accomplishments in her career than I have. Her IMDb page is kind of incredible with all the different guest spots that she's on. And she's one of the leads here. And she does a fine job. She's playing a 10-year-old named Mary who's already
7-year-old.
7-year-old. You're right. She's 10 in real life. And she's playing younger, which is, as an actress, maybe one of the only times she'll be able to do that.
Yeah.
And
No, that happens all the time. Half the kids who play high school kids,
right.
half the actors who play high school kids are 25 to 30 years old.
And she's living down in Central Florida with Frank. He is fixing boats. And something I really, this is such a weird aside, but I grew up in that area. And on the soundtrack, when they're outside, you can hear this drone of...
The cicadas?
Which you hear all the time down there. You never see that in movies.
Yeah.
So I'm eating my popcorn going, yes, that is how Central Florida
kind
sounds.
Kind of an alien sound.
Yes, which I kind of liked. But anyway, so props to the sound mixer there.
Anyway. You know,
good job. So Frank wants Mary to have a normal life. And this means he enrolls her into a regular school for first grade. But her teacher, played by Jenny Slate, realizes that this is a young girl who's into advanced calculus and not 1 + 1 = 2. The movie kind of goes down the road of what's best for this little girl. It reminded me a little bit of Kevin Costner's film Black or White. If you remember that movie, Kevin Costner was put in charge of his deceased daughter's young girl, his granddaughter, who's mixed race, and her African-American relatives wanted her to grow up in the black neighborhood because they thought it was better for her. And so that movie had pretty big questions about what's better, you know, when it comes to the raising of the child. Same thing with Gifted, except instead of race, it's about being smart. And should she go to an advanced school, and should she try to take on these giant math equations, or, as the movie puts it, just be a kid. I'll say, I agree with you, Paul, it's a heartwarming movie. I think it definitely tugs at the heartstrings. I thought it was almost like a happier Manchester by the Sea, which really isn't a hard thing to do because Manchester by the Sea is such a depressing film.
Mm-hmm.
But that movie also had the well-being of a child in mind, and things don't necessarily work out. This movie, I think, wants you to have a happier face when you leave the theater. But I was uncomfortable, though, and I didn't like... what I found to be almost the demonization of intellectualism and being smart. In this movie, the villains are the people who want her to go to the advanced school and want her to focus on math. I think challenging kids, especially when they're gifted, is an important thing and a good thing. I didn't like how cut and dry it was, where you have the grandmother coming in, and she's paying, you know, her backstory, I don't want to get into it, but it's kind of laughable what they say that she's done in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that the kid can only be a kid if she's playing on a playground and not going to a gifted school, I thought was a bad message for the movie to send. Let me tell you that if my son Oscar showed signs like this young girl does, I would put him in a gifted school. I would want him to have every advantage. And I think you can do both. I think you can have your kid play on a playground and do advanced calculus. Something else, too, I don't want to get in too much into spoilers, but a foster family is involved at one point. And maybe it's because my wife has worked in social work and has worked with a lot of foster families. Usually they're salt of the earth people who want the best for their kids.
Yeah.
In this movie, too, they're sort of treated like they're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And again,
at least they're suspicious.
Well, and when you go down the road of what happened to the cat, it's even worse. So I don't know. I get that the movie's heart might have been in the right place. I don't like how it went about it. As far as the performances, Chris Evans is very good. He's once again, like Captain America, playing an altruistic guy who is just the best surrogate dad ever. And I wish he would have had even one flaw. The movie kind of tries to say he might drink too much because he goes out on Friday nights, but he leaves Mary with a great caretaker in Octavia Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
So even then, he doesn't have any kind of flaw.
Yeah.
Let me
add a couple of things to this. One of our fellow movie reviewers, Kate Marquis, she has a gifted child, and she said, you know, if you have a child who is academically gifted, why should they be treated differently than a kid who is athletically gifted? If you have a kid who has a regular natural talent for throwing a ball,
yes,
or catching a ball or running, people will grab you and tell you at an early age, put that kid in this program.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that that kid is getting the extra that they need so that they can go on to be a star in high school and a star on a select team. They actually will be chosen to do that life. And, you know, the parents will be driving across state lines multiple times in a weekend to take them to this tournament and that tournament,
yes,
and do all of that stuff and getting special athletic coaches and all that stuff. Why is it okay for a kid who can do that with their body, but not okay for a kid who can be brilliant with their mind?
Chris Evans' character is offered a scholarship to a school that's right nearby that everybody agrees is a great school for this little girl. And
yeah,
he goes, no, I want her to have a regular life.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
Well, I agree that that's part of the problem. My daughter went through the gifted program in the Parkway system, and you know, she got wonderful things out of that really launched her in her life as well. But she also was able to have a regular life. The two are not... the two can coexist.
Yes, absolutely.
And in this movie, they almost make it like they can't coexist, that they have to be different. And as we learn later on in the movie, you know, I don't want to spoil the way the movie turns out, but we find out things about the crossover between those two systems,
yes,
that can be made to work. Now, that being said, I will say that not only is Chris Evans very good as the uncle here, Frank, but also this little girl, McKenna Grace. I didn't know that she had been doing other things before. Whenever I see something like this, I always think, wow, that's the first time I've ever seen her. I was reminded of Tatum O'Neill in Paper Moon and Drew Barrymore in E.T. And a young actress named Quinn Cummings, who was in The Goodbye Girl with Richard Dreyfuss and Marsha Mason. Young actresses who seem wise beyond their years. And if McKenna Grace is 10 years old, she seems like she's 20 years old.
Yes.
Because she's that good. And the script puts words in her mouth that help you with that. But she pulls it off,
mm-hmm,
with this beautiful, toothless grin of hers and her attitude about everything. I think it's one of the best child performances I've seen by a female actress in a long time. And I only say female because the male actor part of that was the kid in Lion, Sonny Pawar.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Who I thought was fantastic in that. So in the last year, we've had two great kid performances, and I think she qualifies for that.
It reminded me of watching I Am Sam, where there was much ballyhoo about Sean Penn playing mentally challenged, but everybody who watched that movie said, wow, Dakota Fanning was really, really good. And of course, Dakota Fanning went on to have a pretty great career.
Yeah.
And so same thing, you know.
I think this is a better performance than Dakota Fanning has ever given. More likable and more realistic about what a little kid would be like if that kid had this brain that she has in the movie inside of her head.
Jenny Slate, not her fault.
Yep.
I don't think that character, the school teacher, needed to be in this movie.
Well,
I don't know why she's there at the end.
You do know why she's in there.
But there can be a romantic interest. But it doesn't, even that doesn't go anywhere.
I know. I wonder how much of that ended up on the cutting room floor.
True.
I think it was probably there in the original story. And, you know, we want to keep this thing down to 90 minutes.
Can I get into just one minor spoiler that has nothing to do with any of the humans?
Okay.
Do you know where I'm going?
Yeah.
Okay. So, first of all, I'll say that every single time their cat Fred was shown, and it's half a dozen times, it's close up six, seven, eight times, I thought my cat could have been a star because I am the proud owner of a one-eyed cat.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred is a one-eyed cat. And mm-hmm. the entire audience goes, oh, every single time.
Yeah.
Well, at one point, and yes, this is a spoiler for Gifted, and I'm sorry, I don't like treading in spoilers, but here we go. The cat is taken away by the evil foster parents and the evil grandmother who takes the cat away from the little girl. And
well, not taken. Well, okay.
Yes, no, taken
right,
away
okay.
and sent to an animal shelter
yes.
where the cat's last, miraculously, yeah. the yes. last days are upon the cat right away.
Yeah.
Okay? Chris Evans finds out about this and being Captain America, races to the shelter to rescue the cat. Does he get there in time? The audience is holding their breath. He busts into the room in the back of the animal shelter. The needles are on the table ready because Fred is next. He's the next cat who's going down. But he's rescued by Captain America. And I thought, that's when I checked out. That's when I thought, that's the easiest.
Have you never seen a movie with a cat in it before? Of course that's how it's going to go.
This is the cover of National Lampoon. Buy this magazine or we shoot this dog. It's the easiest thing to tell the audience. We're going to kill the animal.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we're not. Thank you for buying the popcorn and soda. That's the worst moment in film.
Patently manipulative is
so
the phrase
bad.
You would have to apply to it, and you're right.
Probably the worst scene I've seen in quite some time.
Okay, now let me say some good things about this movie. what was the movie that you said it reminded you of?
Well, I thought McKenna Grace reminded me. Okay, oh, I'm sorry. Manchester by the Sea, but happier because it's about a kid who. And then Black or White with Kevin Costner.
Okay, I think a better movie to compare this to is Little Man Tate, which Jodie Foster directed and starred in as a woman who she's a waitress and she has a child, and it turns out that child is a freaking genius. He's a child prodigy. And what do you do with a kid like that? And a psychologist who's played by Diane Wiest in that movie comes along, and she runs a school for gifted kids and wants to help this kid go forward. So there are some parallels between that and what happens in this. And the way the kids are treated in both of those movies, I thought was very, very well done. And that certainly is true of this. There's also a little bit of Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
And in the courtroom scenes, a little bit of Kramer versus Kramer gets mixed in there. Now, those are all good things that have mixed in. There's no Sharknado mixed in with the story of Gifted.
No, there's not.
I also thought that Lindsay Duncan, who plays the grandmother, who turns out to be the villain in this movie, she's very good in that role.
She is very good.
But I want to know, what is Octavia Spencer doing in this, playing the landlord, neighbor, best friend of Chris Evans and McKenna Grace.
Mm-hmm.
This is a woman who won an Academy Award for The Help just a couple of years ago. This is a woman who earlier this year was in what will be my best movie of the year unless something replaces it, called Hidden Figures. Why is she playing such a patently supporting role as the nice guy, the nice woman neighbor? She's better than that.
She's
better than the character she's been cast to play. Not that the character has anything wrong with her. It's just that Octavia Spencer shouldn't be putting time in those kind of roles. I wonder if this was made before Hidden Figures. That certainly is possible. But even then, it was after The Help.
Yeah.
So her career should have been taking off in many ways that it hasn't been. That's disappointing to me.
I would blame screenwriters for that, because just like I think Jenny Slate's role was underwritten, to say the least. I think the neighbor who takes care of Mary when Frank has to have time for himself, yes, the movie's not about her, but give me something more than I like to karaoke, because there was nothing else there about her character.
I know. Speaking of Jenny Slate, did you see the movie Obvious Child?
I did.
That she made? That's a wonderful movie. If you haven't checked that out, put that on your Netflix queue, Obvious Child.
I did not enjoy Gifted. I know what they were trying to do. I think you're right. It's heartwarming, but I think it's a little too forced. Not just the cat scene, but I think the overall ending. And I think the message of the movie, which is demonizing helping out gifted kids. Because I don't buy, and we're not going to get into it, but I don't buy why the grandma's evil. And that whole storyline was just laughably bad. So I can't recommend this on a scale of one to 10,
yeah.
I would give Gifted about a 3.
Okay.
And those 3 points are all for McKenna Grace and Chris Evans.
Yeah, well, I think that they're terrific. McKenna Grace gets huge kudos from me for this. I give the movie a 7 out of 10 because it is heartwarming, and even though it has those flaws, I think it works, and I think the people who were in the theater at the screening that we saw it really enjoyed themselves.
They loved it.
And if you're not the kind of person who wants to go The Fate of the Furious this weekend, and you want to have something to do that'll be a little bit more heartwarming, this movie, Gifted, might fit that bill perfectly. More showbiz stuff coming up here on the Big 550 KTRS. This is the show. showbiz segment of the show here on the Big 550 KTRS. Paul and Dan and Ian and Max and Tim. We call it the father of all shows. And thank you very much for listening. Ian is playing the Survivor music because that show leapt into the headlines this week after a controversial segment at Tribal Council on the episode that aired on Wednesday night, in which one member of this tribe that had to go to Tribal Council, a guy by the name of Jeff Varner, outed another member of his tribe, a guy by the name of Zeke Smith, as being transgender by turning to him and talking about deception and saying, these people don't know what I'm talking about how deceptive you are. Why have you never told anybody that you're transgender? And at that point, there had not been any discussion of this guy,
no,
who was on his second consecutive season of Survivor. He was on last fall, and they brought him back for this kind of all-star season that they're doing now. And this had never been brought up before. What was your reaction when you were watching it, Ian? Because I know you're as big a fan of the show as I am.
Yes. And I really didn't have it spoiled. I kind of saw, because I didn't watch it that night. So I saw a headline. I really didn't even read in it, but I knew something big was going to happen. But I like everybody else on the tribe there, just your jaw dropped. And then the way he was so apologetic afterwards and just, devastated.
After the other tribe members berated him.
Right.
For outing Zeke.
And because he's a gay man as well.
Yes.
So you get caught up in that game. I totally understand where he's coming from with that. And these people are hungry. They're mentally, tired and...
What was his reason for doing this? What did he stand to gain?
He wanted the
just
rest
to
of...
show the tribe that, he's not exactly as
trustworthy.
So he was trying
to curry favor then with the rest of them.
He was hoping he was going to get voted out.
Okay.
And he was hoping to avoid that by getting them to look at another member of the tribe as deceptive. And why don't you vote this guy out instead?
So it was a last ditch, Hail Mary, you're going to vote me out. How about this?
Yes,
exactly.
Exactly. Now, here's what's odd about that. Zeke had never told Jeff that. He had not told anybody that he was transgender, except Jeff Probst and the production people knew during casting. And they had said to him, well, we're not going to say anything to anybody about this.
Sure.
And we're going to let you handle it. Now, here's the remarkable thing about the storm that this created Wednesday night, all day yesterday, and still today on social media. This was filmed 10 months ago. And Jeff Probst, who's the executive producer of Survivor, and the people at CBS were smart enough to go to Zeke and say, we'll handle this any way you want us to.
Hmm.
Our friend Andy Daynard, who runs the website realityblurred.com, who's been on this show many, many times, he wrote a thing Wednesday night where he was furious with Probst and CBS for even airing this. Because Jeff Probst in the tribal council said to Jeff Varner, do you realize you didn't just out him in front of six other people? You outed him in front of millions of other people. And Andy's point was, no, Jeff, you did that by deciding to put this in the show. But what we found out since then is that Zeke had no problem with that because he knew it was going to come out eventually, and he had all this time to prepare.
Oh, yeah, they could have reshot that tribal council.
I'm not sure that they could have, because there are going to be repercussions from that, I'm sure, in the next couple of episodes. Are you going to cut out all mention of the transgender thing completely? I guess you could do that.
Right.
But Zeke himself could have come out 9 months ago and told everybody, by the way, as you'll see on TV, dot, dot, dot. But then he didn't. He decided to let television.
Not with the contracts they signed for that show.
He's not allowed to say anything about that.
But what I'm saying is when Probst came to him and said, we can handle this however you want, he must have known in 10 months when this airs, that's what's going to out me.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And he was prepared for it. And he wrote a lengthy, very personal, very candid essay, which is on the Hollywood Reporter website today. And he's also talked to a couple of other people and explained, look, this was a situation that I knew was going to come up at some point, and I had to figure out how to deal with it, and that Probst and the CBS people gave him a remarkable amount of room to deal with it the way they wanted to, because they realized what an incredible invasion of his privacy this is. I mean, this is the sort of thing that no one should ever announce to the world without your permission, if you're that person. And so I thought that they kind of handled it well.
Oh, how did that guy find out?
That's what we don't know.
I think he said later on, I don't know if I saw a quote from him on Twitter or something. It's just something that he was able to pick up that.
You figured out.
You know, I'm sure.
I mean, really?
I sensed that you were transgender, yeah, I'm outing you on national TV.
I don't buy that at all.
When he went in, he saw him going into the girls' bathroom, probably.
There isn't one. They're in the jungle.
The girls' bush.
The girls' bush, yeah.
But I beg your pardon?
Well, that's another one. Yeah. Well.
But he said he has friends. Jeff Arner, the guy who said it, said later he has friends that are transgender and...
I would never out somebody, but you
he
just
must
did.
Have been able to pick up on something. No, I'm saying how he knew.
Yeah, it was obvious on the show that he felt terrible. During the closing credits, he was crying about it.
Was he still voted off?
Oh yeah. In fact, they didn't even go vote. Probst essentially said, "Everybody here agrees that Varner's going." Yes.
Wow.
And then his torch was snuffed, and he was off the show. And now he's had to live with knowing that for 10 months. He probably couldn't tell anybody.
Mm-mm. No.
Here's the weird thing. Yesterday, the real estate company that he works for fired him.
What?
Yeah.
Really? Because of that?
Not because of his actions, but because we don't need to be dragged into something like this.
Wow.
So because of his actions.
Yeah.
Yes.
They could say it's not, but yes, pretty that's much. Exactly why.
Now, here's the weird thing about Jeff Varner. This is third time being on Survivor. He is the only person in the history of that show to do it 3 times and never even make it to the jury. Everybody else who's done it multiple times was back there because they lasted long on the show. This guy didn't, and he won't be on the jury this year.
Yeah,
either.
What did he have, like 12, 13 years or something in between?
I think the first one was in 01 or 02.
Yeah.
So 15 years, yeah. 16 years later.
Wow.
So he's gone, and now I guess next week we see some of the fallout from that within the tribe and whether the other tribe finds out and... It was one of the most awkward things I've ever seen on a reality show this week.
Did you have any inkling it was coming at all when you watched it, or was it a complete and total surprise?
Total surprise to me.
Wow.
How about you?
Well, I watched it later, so I did kind of see. I knew something was going to happen. I didn't know the details.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't watch it till the next... No, I guess I watched it late that night, like 2 or 3 hours after it aired, and I didn't see any social media in the meantime. We were talking before about series like Fast and the Furious that have gone for 8, 9, mm-hmm. 10 episodes. Loyal listener Jeff Olson emailed me to say Friday the 13th got to 10, plus one for Freddy versus Jason, and right. one more for the 2009 reboot. And The Land Before Time got up to 13 or so. But that's animated, and I think most of those were on TV and not in theaters.
Yeah, those are direct-to-DVD. So I'm sure there's a lot of direct-to-DVD series. I wouldn't count those. But as far as theatrically released, your loyal listener is correct that Jason got to 10 with Jason X. Which was set in space, and then Freddy versus Jason.
It was.
It was. Jason X was set.
He took
in space.
Off the mask, and it was Elon Musk. Now, while we're speaking of space, we have to talk about you being very excited about a trailer for a new Star Wars movie being released today.
It's a big day, Paul.
See, I'm not part of the Star Wars cult.
That's fine.
But I know you are.
I am.
And so now you have to wait 8 months to see the movie.
Yeah, but I can watch the trailer every single night before I go to sleep.
Oh, my goodness.
Share a little bit about what's in there for people who didn't know this existed.
Today at 11 o'clock in the morning, Central Standard Time, 12 p.m. Eastern Time during Star Wars Celebration, which is happening right now in Orlando, they unleash what they're calling a teaser trailer for Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. The reason why I say they're calling it this is because when the teaser trailer for the last episodic Star Wars film, Force Awakens, was released, it's about a minute long, had a couple of voiceovers, Millennium Falcon, that was it. So my expectations were pretty low. Turns out they gave us two full minutes, which I'm shocked about, with lots of scenes that hinted a pretty amazing, exciting story. I'm blown away by this trailer.
Same cast as the last movie?
Same cast as Force Awakens. So not Rogue One, that was the most recent one, which takes place before Episode 4, A New Hope, which everybody knew as Star Wars back in 77. This one picks up from the final shot of Force Awakens, which is Rey, played by Daisy Ridley, handing the lightsaber of Anakin Skywalker to Luke Skywalker, who's in self-imposed exile, as far as we know, on this island. This trailer picks up with her training, doing like Jedi type of training underneath Luke. Although at the end of the trailer, shockingly, Luke says, "I know of only one truth, and that is the Jedi must end."
Thus the name of the movie, The Last Jedi.
So we don't know if Luke is quoting somebody else or if these are his thoughts. If he does turn his back on the Jedi Order, it wouldn't be that shocking. His dad did the same thing when he became Darth Vader. audio from the trailer.
Right, yeah, there. Get Dan some Gas X.
We see Finn, played by John Boyega, great young actor, in a medical compartment. We don't see him up and about. He was gravely injured in the last movie. And we see Poe Dameron, played by Oscar Isaac, running down a corridor with BB-8,
Poe Dameron,
fan favorite droid, next to him. I've watched it about a million times already.
He used to be the leader of North Korea, Dan.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Poe Dameron.
Now, what about Carrie Fisher? Is she going to be in this next movie?
You see what looks like the back of Carrie Fisher looking at one of her patented, you know, screens of the galaxy. And they actually say that non-archive footage, new footage of Carrie Fisher will be in the 9th movie, which is a couple years off. So she must have already shot some things for that movie to bring her story to a close, which is interesting.
They actually patented the screen of the galaxy?
Well, I'm sure she has, because every time you see her,
it's not patent pending, is it?
It's Patton Oswalt, actually. It's Cameo.
Oh, man.
And on that note, that's our showbiz stuff for this week. Next hour, the Harris Challenge, Knuckleheads in the News, and Mike Evans, all ahead on the Big 550 KTRS.